Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. On deck this week, we have UFC Wichita. Our main event is Junior Dos Santos taking on the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. I am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. Here, as always, with the co-host and analyst, Joe Sun Tzu. Chris from RotoWire, also known as at Real Chris Olsen. Guys, a really kind of interesting week in terms of pricing, because a lot of close pick'em fights, and you got somebody who's in the minus 200 range up at 9,400. So how is this going to set up in terms of DraftKings? We'll start with you, Chris.
Yeah, I actually see a few exploitable matchups this week. I think a couple of those fighters fit well into a price range. If you're looking to save, there's a couple of fighters, like you said, in the 8,000 range where you kind of have to pick a side on, but I think I'm fairly solid on my sides in most of those scenarios. So I'm looking forward to a good solid card and something to sink my teeth into here.
Joe, I know you've been busy this week, but you got enough research in?
Wow, yeah. First, I'd like to just briefly touch upon last week. One of us had several hot picks that actually crushed it. Hot takes. Diego Sanchez inside the distance cashed at plus 900.
There you go.
And Chiesan outscored John Jones. We had our RotoWire Sirius XM debut. Now we are trying to find the clip for that. Apparently it's not all that easy to get a clip from Sirius XM, but I think it went pretty well. For those of you that listened, I got some good feedback. I appreciate it. Sean or Chris is going to be next up for that. So we look forward to that. I even pitched our bosses at RotoWire. Give us the worst time, possibly available. And, midnight. I know Sean might have some issues with that. But give us the worst times possibly available.
And I'd make it work on a Friday.
Yeah, and let us fill up 30 minutes to an hour. We'll have a call in feature. It'd be really cool. So
can Chris do a half hour?
I don't know.
We have a hard time trimming to an hour. Which, by the way, guys, we are going to keep this one a little bit short.
Yeah,
we are running late, and I, of course, this is a week. I'm in the process of packing up two houses to start construction and all that fun stuff.
Let's jump into.
But I do want to, real quick, just because you mentioned it, So the next two pay-per-views for Sirius 236, Holloway versus Poirier 2. What's after that? Anybody know?
237 is, where is that? Where's 237? Is that Brazil?
Oh, yeah, 238. What happened? 237, to be determined, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
Yeah, 237 is Brazil. Yeah, I am strongly considering going to that Atlanta card. You know, our good friend Mark Matheson is down there. We also have, you know, Dan Levy and Shaq. And I actually owe Dan some meals from my early naive days of MMA gambling. So I may actually make an effort to go down to see that card.
All right. Before we get started, actually two things before we get started. One, you got called out in chat, one of the hot takes in chat that our friend Otto was yelling and screaming about also cashed, and Hannah Cyphers.
Cyphers,
by
yeah.
the way, I saw broke her arm in that fight.
Did she break her arm?
She broke her arm in the first round, posted pictures, Paige Van Zandt style from the hospital.
She is tough, that girl. I mean, and I actually played her in cash, and yet this was enough, 2 weeks in a row, I go 5-1 in cash and lose the majority of my cash.
High scoring, had to have Usman.
I know.
Anyway, before we get started, Fight IQ brought to you by RotoWire. Go to rotowire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Make sure to like, comment, subscribe here on YouTube. Record these Fridays around 8 o'clock. If you're listening after the fact on iTunes, make sure and jump in the YouTube chat. Even if you're on YouTube, you're a YouTube listener, please subscribe on iTunes. Appreciate it. It's RotoWire MMA. Let's jump into the fights. First fight of the night, Alex White, 8,600, taking on Dan Moret at 7,600. White is the favorite, minus 140. Comeback on Moret is plus 130. Moret going to be a popular underdog. I like him here as well. Alex White can't grapple. Moret can grapple. Look decent against Gilbert Mourinho Burns. I like Moret as a dog on this card, where I do like several dogs. Joe, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I have very few rules in life, and one of them is not to select anyone to represent me in any way who's ever on purpose consumed gasoline. So that is the reason why I am not on Alex White here. In all seriousness, Moret got nuked by Burns, but he actually, I don't know how I could say this when it doesn't come out. I mean, he showed some glimpses in the first round. I like him here. I think Alex White is, it's hard for me to imagine that he's been in the UFC as long as he has. I'm going to go with the dog here. It's not a super confident pick, but and in a card where we seemingly have a number of dogs that maybe make a bit more sense, I'm not endorsing a play on him, but I am going to pick him to win this fight, and I'm going to have very little of Alex White in my mass entry DK lineups.
Great. Chris.
Chris, you might be on mute.
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to pull the chat up. All right, but I think I'm going with Moret too. I agree with Joe's assessment about that Burns fight. He actually hurt Gilbert Burns in that fight with a counter overhand, which is Gilbert Burns started to panic wrestle, and he's just much stronger than Moret, so he was able to work him over there. And in the second round, he found his kill shot. But I like Moret as kind of just a come forward striker who can counterpunch a little bit. And we know he's a proficient grappler. We've seen Alex White get out grappled before. We saw James Krause have some success with those takedowns. I think Moret is live to a submission here. And I also wouldn't be surprised if he stung him on the feet a time or two. So yeah, he should be a popular dog, as you said, but he's one I'm looking at pretty closely this week as well.
All right, next up, Alex Morono taking on Zach Otto. Morono's 9,100. Otto is 7,100. Morono's the favorite, minus 175. Zach Otto plus 165. Guys, I got to say, good job. I love the pacing so far. Let's keep it going ESPN Plus style. And I'll keep the train going by saying Zach Otto is terrible. He's a low-volume striker who once scored 42 points in a win. I will never roster him. I don't care how cheap he is. If he beats me, he beats me. Morono is dangerous, explosive. GPP only, though, because he's not high volume. He just can get a finish here. I think he's better on the ground, has more power on the feet. Otto probably a little more technical, but I like Morono. He's the only one with upside in this matchup for me. Chris?
I actually like Zach Otto a little bit here.
How is he going to score?
I think the reason is, you know, he's a good wrestler. We've seen...
Whoa, time. I know, okay. I've been basing. He had problems grappling with Sage Northcutt. Get out of here.
He didn't have problems. He's not a good defensive wrestler. I never said that. He's a guy who can get takedowns. Let's say that.
He's not going to want to go to the ground with Morono. I think he'll get his neck taken.
Okay. Well, be as it may, I think that he's a guy who can look for takedowns here, and I think on the feet he's a good enough boxer to where Morono, who's a guy who just wants to, who can just like stick himself in the corner and wants to just have a slow kickboxing match. I think that's the kind of a fight where Otto can win, just by virtue of being more technical. Morono kind of just wants to stand in there and throw counter bombs, which I'm not sure is going to have that much success. The one thing I will say about Otto that makes me a little nervous is we've seen him react very badly to getting hit in his last fight. That should have probably been a loss against the Contender Series alum whose name escapes me now.
I think it was Dwight Grant, and that should have been a loss 10 times over.
Yes, Dwight Grant. So that kind of spooks me a little bit. But overall, I just don't know that Morono is active enough on the feet. And he certainly doesn't use any wrestling hardly, despite being a jiu-jitsu black belt. So I think the only way this goes to the ground is if Otto wants it there. And on the feet, like I said, a slow-paced kickboxing match where you have Otto as a reasonably technical striker, I think he can get this done. So I'm going to put a pretty faint praise, a faint lean on the dog here, but I'm not going to have much Morono.
I think that was way too generous. And you're getting lit up in chat, so I enjoy it. Joe?
Yeah, I would. If anybody knows, I would love for someone to tell me where Otto got his belt. I've been down on Otto ever since he just shit the bed against Sage Northcutt. I mean, the fact that, you know, he could not finish him and actually let Sage come back and nuke him really put me down on Zach Otto. He's a low-output fighter. Morono, on the other hand, is, look, I don't want a lot of this fight for DK, but Morono is coming off a fight of the night victory as a dog against Song Kanan. But yes, that was the fight of the night against Song Kanan, so he shows at least he has it in him to put on an exciting fight.
He was in a fun fight with Nico Price too.
Yeah, that was a good fight too. They hurt each other. That was a good fight too. So look, I like Morono to win a fair bit over Otto. I just don't know if at the price point he's going to get what he needs or what you're going to need for him in DK. So I don't want a lot of this fight in DK, but I am decisively picking Alex Morono to win this fight.
All right, guys, here comes one of the spots. I'm a little scared of how much I like it because I've been burned before, and I'm going to keep going back there.
I think you and I are the same on this one.
Luis Smolka, 8,300, taking on Matt Danger Schnell at 7,900. Smolka minus 120, Schnell plus 110. The line keeps getting closer. It's getting to the point where I might actually have a bet on Luis Smolka. In fact, at minus 120, I think I might make that here while you guys are talking. I think he can out-grapple Schnell. I think he's better on the ground. I think Schnell gets too comfortable off his back. Schnell is live to a submission, has subs on his record, is a good submission artist, but it's not going to win rounds that way. I don't think he catches Smolka. Schnell probably the better striker because Smolka just rushes in and closes range, but Schnell's got no chin. He got knocked out from a small hammer fist from Hector Sandoval. So I think Smolka's incredibly live. I don't like how much I like this fight. I just don't rate Schnell very highly. I'm hoping Smolka's over his outside the cage issues. Give me Smolka. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, look, I like that Schnell has moved out of his no-name camp in Louisiana to ATT. I'm just not ready to endorse him based on a split decision win of a newcomer in the UFC, Ioi. He has lost to anybody who's halfway decent that he's faced. Smolka's pedigree is so much better. You know, and I think if Schnell takes it to the ground, like, that would make me love Smolka all that much more. I think his one path to victory is to keep this fight standing. You know, Smolka's got speed. I like that he turned his life around. He's at Team Oyama, moved from Hawaii to Orange County, liked what I saw. Look, it wasn't a super tough opponent, but to get his feet back wet into the UFC, I think he showed enough. I like him here a fair amount. I think he's one of my better, or I should say favorite plays on the card. I like his salary. I think he could score a lot of points. I would have a taste of Schnell in GPPs But I am all the way Luis Smoka here.
Chris.
So this is a fun one because I haven't had like one of these real contrarian weeks in a while. So I'm taking Schnell here. And I think the reason is Joe alluded to it. And you said a little bit also, Sean, is that I think Schnell is a significantly better striker. I think he's fairly quick. I think he throws in combination well. He can counter-strike a little bit. He can wrestle a little bit, but I would tend to agree that he probably doesn't want this fight to the ground. The reason why I can't trust Smolka, and I know that because going into that fight with Sumardij, what we said was, boy, if only Smolka would wrestle more, and then he wrestled the entire fight. So that was good. But the thing that bothers me about it is the second round, he was actually getting lit up with strikes just because he was so intent on closing the distance. Now, eventually, he did close the distance and get a takedown, but I just don't like the fact that maybe he's going to just wade carelessly into the pocket looking for takedowns here. I think a guy like Schnell is too good of a striker to do that against, and so it worries me. I think that, I don't know, maybe he goes back to just his all-wrestling style. As long as it's on the feet, I do think he runs the risk of getting tagged up. I think Schnell has enough off his back to maybe not get a sub, but at least keep himself safe. I don't think Schmolka necessarily dominates him there. And just overall, I think that Schmolka might be smoke and mirrors from the last fight. So,
well, let me ask you, what are you basing Schnell's striking acumen on? Like his fight against who?
What I've seen.
Against guys that are no longer in the UFC. No, I mean,
do you forget that the fight against Inoue, everyone expected him to lose that fight?
He wasn't that big an underdog. I mean, that was a UFC newcomer.
I'm saying as far as the public goes, everyone expected him to lose that fight.
As a UFC newcomer, though, I mean, really, who was he?
But that's, you know,
I get it. I will just warn you, Chris, this fight plays out at range. The only one who I think is getting a knockout here is Smolka, because Schnell is no chin and they are 125ers.
135
now.
There's the bantamweight. And that's the other reason why I like Smolka not having to cut that extra 10 pounds.
That's another thing. Like that was weird. He had just gotten slammed on his head. I mean, I don't know. That was weird. I'm not ready to say that he's got no chin based on that, but that's.
Let's move on here. Jeff Hughes, 9,300. Maurice Green, 6,900. Jeff Hughes minus 225. Comeback on Green is plus 205. We saw this fight less than a year ago in LFA. Hughes dominated over five rounds. Green had some submissions off his back, which is weird for heavyweight, but he has them. Hughes, good ground and pound. Just, I think, dominant on top. Is going to grind up Maurice Green. The problem is the price tag here, but again, I think we saw this fight less than a year ago, and I know I've said a lot of times rematches don't play out the same way, but that fight went how a fight between these two should. I think Green is a GPP dart because they're heavyweight. I think Hughes is the better fighter and prospect, but these are two low-level fighters, so tread with caution. Joe, please don't tell me you're picking Maurice Green.
No, I mean, look, I don't understand the matchmaking here. So not only did we see this fight, both fighters were coming off full camps. This is what, a 7-8-day notice fight for Maurice Green. Right. So I don't understand. Like, I don't understand the matchmaking. He was supposed to fight, I believe, Spitz, and something happened there and Green's stepping in. So not only are we getting a fight that we've seen already where one guy decisively beat the other guy, but we've seen in the Tough House, if anybody who's watched Tough, Green has got some habits that are, how can we say this, unfighter-like. He smokes. He likes to drink excessively. Look, I'm not casting aspersions, but typically that is not something you would expect of athletes. And now we've got him coming off of a short, you know, with a short camp to take this fight against Stipe Miocic's sparring partner here in Hughes. So one thing I didn't get to say in the beginning, I think this is an incredibly difficult week to put together a cash lineup just because I see so much variance. However, you could do a lot worse than putting Jeff Hughes at the top of any cash lineup that you're looking to create. Jeff Hughes wins it relatively easily.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, I just don't see a lot of Maurice Greene that tells me he can beat anybody except for like really low level fighters. He's just a very slow kickboxer who holds his chin up in the air. And even that sub off his back against Batista was very slow. He missed it the first time. He had to redo it. Batista did nothing to defend. Like,
it was super slow motion triangle.
It was crazy. He's not going to catch a ton of people with like that. So I like that Sean had to come off mute just to add that. That was good. But yeah, I mean, of course he can get a knockout. He's live to that. He's a powerful guy, but Jeff Hughes is, I mean, he's a come forward striker. I think he's going to get in the pocket and put volume on Maurice Greene the same way he did in their first fight. He can wrestle a little bit too. The funny thing about a guy like Hughes, if you look at his resume, he doesn't have a lot of stoppages, which is kind of weird for a big heavyweight, but I think he has like 6 decisions in 10 wins or something like that, 12 wins. But so that could make his price tag a little prohibitive. But I do think that – and plus we've seen Maurice Greene gas already in the Tough House. So I don't know. I'm taking use here. The price is like a little bit – I kind of want to stay away from it. But if that directs other people away – then that can be a good point, I think, to get some scarcity, because I actually like Hughes quite a bit here.
All right, Grant Dawson, 8,700, taking in Julian Arosa at 7,500. Dawson minus 170, Arosa plus 160. Our good friend Brett Apley had my favorite tweet of the week. It was about Juicy J, basically saying he's a great combination of a guy who trusts his chin but doesn't have one. That's what he is. I really can't sum up Julian Arosa any much better than that. Arosa going to be the better striker, I would think. Can get hit, can get put out. Dawson, really good grappler, finishing machine in the regionals. Also, he's that age. Last time we saw him, he was 23. He's 25 now. It's been a little over a year and a half. These guys improve quick. This is a GPP fight. I like Dawson, his finishing ability. I don't rate Arosa really at all. So I'll take Dawson here in GPPs. Chris?
Yeah, I've kind of moved towards like loving Dawson to kind of thinking he's going to win, but thinking Arosa is a little bit live. And I think the reason is you noted just how bad of a striker he is. I think they're both pretty bad strikers. Dawson is a submission specialist. Once he gets the fight to the ground, he's in his world. He's good on – he can float on top. He hunts for the submissions. He goes for the back. But I just think that the only reason I can't say pick Arosa for the upset is because, I mean, I like some things about him. Like, I think his funky kind of movement could be okay to, like, you know, evade some of the takedowns. I mean, Arosa, for all his stoppage losses, has never been subbed. But the thing is that he doesn't have a plan as a striker either. He kind of just wades into the pocket with his chin up. And even for a guy who isn't a polished striker like Grant, he can get caught that way. I mean, I think they can kind of both catch each other, but I just can't trust Arosa, because at least it looks like that Grant Dawson has a plan for what he wants to do in the fight, that is take this to the ground. And Arosa doesn't have anything like that. I think he's just going to be flying by the seat of his pants until he gets knocked out or knocks his opponent out. So I'm going to take Dawson here, but Dawson is such an unpolished striker, and Arosa's got some knockouts on his record, so that could happen. I mean, if you're taking a bunch of GPPs, maybe a couple of shots, but overall, I just can't pick Julian Arosa to win a fight, so I'm not going to do it.
Joe, how about for you?
Well, so I happen to know the president of the Juicy J fan club. His name is YC Lindsay on Twitter, and he saw all these girls wearing shorts and tops with Juicy. He thought they were all Arosa fans. You know, so that's YC. He is the one guy that is steadfast backing Juicy J here. Look, I think he's got a puncher's chance as much as anybody. This is a home fight, essentially, for Grant here. He is training at Glory in Kansas City with that crew. I wonder if he sparred with Megan Anderson. In any case, it's a local fight for him. My only concern here is octagon jitters. I think he could get the fight to the ground. He is coming off a relatively long layoff, which concerned me. I couldn't figure out why. Apparently, He tested positive for something, but disputed it. And after a lengthy fight, I think he won his appeal. You know, he's a clean-cut religious kid. Believe it or not, he's 25 years old, and he's actually been fighting since 2012. He's got like an amateur. He's got 13 fights professional, and he's got like another, I want to say, 6 to 7 to 8 fights as an amateur. So even though Juicy J on paper has got more MMA fights, you know, this kid has been fighting for a long time. So I'm going to give him – I'm going to say he wins here. I you know, again, I would be tempted to use him in cash if you're playing cash this week. So I am picking the favorite here.
All right, Yana Kunitskaya, 8,900. Taking on Marion Renault, 7,300. Kunitskaya, minus 180. Comeback on Renault, plus 168. This is a spot that, again, I like it a ton. It's Yana Kunitskaya. I think she's stronger than Marion Renault, who's a 41-year-old gym teacher, part-time fighter, has gas tank issues, and wins her fights by catching people in the third round in submissions. Sarah McMahon in the second round. I think Kunitskaya is going to be – she is deceptively strong, better in the clinch. The one worry I have is how well does Kunitskaya score, because if she decides to keep it in the clinch rather than takedowns, she won't score great. But everyone takes down Marion Renault. Marion Renault has some good wins on her record, like, you know, Jessica Andrade back in the day, but she's just not there. Kunitskaya, good up-and-comer. I think the strength is going to be too much here, as well as the takedowns. I hate fighters who fight off the back, so give me Yana Kunitskaya. Joe?
Yeah, so I love Marion Renault. I mean, not in this fight, but I like her. I like what she's accomplished. You know, I like the positive message that she's put out there. If her takedown defense wasn't so god-awful, I would be willing to give her more of a chance here. My only concern, and you kind of vetted it, Sean, is scoring. Like, I do believe that Konoskova will get the takedowns. What I'm less certain of is that she'll actually do advances and get other types of grappling points, because there is some risk. And once you get the takedown, you know, putting yourself in a bad position against a fighter who is very adept at working for submissions off her back. So I could certainly see some rinse and repeat takedowns. I just don't know if you're going to see other grappling points. And I don't know if there's going to be a lot of significant strikes. So while I pick Kunitskaya, I don't know how I feel about this fight from a DraftKings perspective. I would have a few shares of each. Look, Renault's price is attractive. I mean, if she wins in any way, she's likely gonna that's gonna be okay. Kunitskaya, on the other hand, at 8.7 is gonna need some points. I don't know that she's gonna finish Renault, but absent a finish, it's doubtful whether she's gonna earn what you need for a GPP. So I'm gonna pick Yana here. I just don't know. I wouldn't have a lot of shares of her and DK, though.
Chris?
Yeah, I think it's really hard, and I like Marion Renault too. I think it's really hard to pick her after we just saw a big, strong grappler come in and take her down over and over and over again, because that's pretty much what we have here.
Yep.
Renault didn't have nearly as much off her back against Kat Zingano as I thought she might. She was pretty much just stuck wherever Zingano wanted her. And I think Kunitskaya can do much the same thing. Kunitskaya also has a kickboxing background. She's got a good kicking game at range. I like Renault. She's a good fluid striker, but I just don't think she has enough here. I think she's pretty safe. You could be worrying about her scores, but I see a lot of takedowns here. I really do. So, I mean, that and a win, I think, could pile up. I think she's pretty safe. And I think 90 to 95 isn't out of the question. So, you know, I say go for it.
Anthony Rocco Martin, 9,200, taking on Sergio Moraes, 7,000. Anthony Rocco Martin's minus 200, Sergio Moraes plus 185. Look, you say this about all these, you said it about Yana Kunitskaya. It's a theme up in this range, even if you're picking these guys to win. Not many people, I think, are going to score very highly. The mid-8 range is more attractive. But in this fight overall, I'm actually picking the dog straight up. I think if Martin wins, it's going to be a volume-based striking decision. You don't want to grapple with Sergio Moraes. Moraes is a little like Gilbert Burns in that because he has great BJJ, he doesn't have to worry about wrestling, and he just wings bombs. I think if his fight hits the ground, he'll get a sub, and on the feet, he's live to it to a finish. So either way, even if you're picking Martin, I don't know how he scores well, and Moraes is live for GPPs and a punt play in cash. And ultimately, I actually think he's going to catch a submission in this one or land something big. I think Moraes wins by finish. I'm going to have him in GPPs, but you don't really need a ton because you're not hurting for, you don't want to pay a ton of these pay up options. So give me Marais here. Chris, start with you.
Yeah, I'm actually taking Martin here. I think that he uses his length well enough to where, like, when Marais throws at the big bombs like that, he could very well just be eating straight shots down the middle. I know that he likes to catch people with those awkward angles and things. We saw him do a really good job against Tim Means, although, I mean, you know, there's an argument that he lost that fight. But either way, you know, he hung in there with him, so good for him. I think Martin uses his length a little better than Tim Means does. And I also think, look, Marais, I mean, just got knocked out. Well, not just, but got knocked out by Usman. So I think Martin has got power in his hands, although we haven't seen him get stoppages by strikes in the UFC. That's true. But I do think he has power in his hands. He hurt Kata Nakamura in their fight. I think that Marais's wildness is just going to hurt him here. And unless he gets it to the ground, which two things about that. One, he doesn't wrestle very often. And two, Martin's got pretty good BJJ. Not as good as Marais, I wouldn't imagine. But maybe
he wants no part of the ground. Disagree. Well, if you're going anywhere near this, the ground is death.
No. I don't think he wants any part of the ground. I'm just saying he might have enough BJJ to keep himself safe.
No. If this fight hits the ground, I think he's done.
Marais
is on a different level than 99% of the people in
it. He's won world championships.
It could be. I'm not saying that we haven't seen his BJJ in the octagon, because we have. But I mean, just the fact that he's won world championships, I mean, we've seen that not bear fruit in the UFC either. But be as it may, because we've already seen his BJJ. I'm just saying that he's not absolutely dead when it hits the ground. I don't
disagree.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Anthony could win this fight, but if he does, he spends less than 45 seconds on the ground.
I agree. I think that he has to get himself back to his feet. I'm saying that I think he might be able to do that. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe. Disagree.
Does that pass? Maybe. All right. Well, that's all I wanted was a chance to speak to get past that sentence. Okay. So,
You've gone on for a while about this fight. I let that go a while.
Well, I mean, am I ready to go yet, or you need more time, Chris?
No, that's pretty much it. I think that
How are we gonna get to an hour on Sirius? Even a half hour, jeez.
Hey, you can't rush the process, guys.
Okay. So, first of all, for those of you who use Tapology to do your research, the camp for Tony Martin is wrong. He is not. He is at ATT. With his girlfriend, Kayla Harrison, judo gold medalist. It has him at a different team on Tapology. Look, I have been on Tony Martin in several fights. The issue is he has not really been a great DraftKings fighter. I think that Marais is the better DraftKings play here. I just don't see, I mean, I don't think we've ever seen Tony Martin this high salary-wise over his entire tenure on DraftKings for his UFC fights. So I just don't know that he's that great a play for. I'm going to tentatively pick him to win, although I certainly see Sean's point. I will have more shares of Marais, so I really want Marais to win. By the way, all Marais has done in the UFC is win. If you look at his record from 2012, he's 8-1. His one loss being to Kamaru Usman since October 2012. So all this guy does is win. He's getting disrespected. This line is way too wide. This should be much closer to a pick. There's recency bias on Tony Martin for finishing Jake Matthews. I hate doing it. I'm going to pick Tony Martin to win, but I do think that Marais is the better DraftKings play, and I will have more shares of Marais.
By the way, Martin needed that finisher. He was losing to Jake
Martin. Which is ridiculous. But that would have been the biggest robbery of all time. But anyway.
No. Have you seen Marion Renault and what's-her-face?
Ashley Evans-Smith. That was the biggest robbery. Oh, my God. I was so pissed off.
All right. Let's move on here. Omari Akhmedov, 8,500, taking on Tim Boach at 7,700. Akhmedov minus 145, Boach plus 135. This is a fight I've actually bounced back and forth on all week. I'm currently on Tim Boach. I just, this retirement talk of his and his home business, training out of his house, really is unsettling, but he's the bigger guy. good submissions. I think he actually, despite coming down from, you know, he used to fight at 205, Akhmedov coming up from 170. He actually, I think he moves better than Akhmedov, who's very stationary. I think he'll be better on the feet. And if Akhmedov, the way he shoots for takedowns or looks for takedowns in that clinch, man, that 10-finger guillotine of Tim Boetsch is nasty. And I like Boetsch all around here. It's not super confident because of some of those intangibles. And Akhmedov is clearly the younger fighter. So give me Boetsch, but I'm not super confident here. Joe, you got a confident pick in this fight?
It's not confident, but I'm going to go the other way. I mean, I heard the term today relative to Boetsch, and I'll give the bloody elbow. I believe it was Victor Martinez at Bloody Elbow, redneck judo at Tim Boetsch. Practices, look, it's hard for me to get behind a guy who's half out the door. You know, he's got his little shaved ice business, which I guess, you know, right now, if you're in the Midwest, you're probably not selling much shaved ice. But, you know, I'm sure he does his business during the summer. But you got, you know, 1 foot out the door. I like that, you know, Akhmedov moved up to middleweight, you know, his last few fights. He was he was a massive, you know, welterweight. I do like his win over Rock Hassan. You know, I don't have a super strong take on this fight. And, you know, I could see Akhmedov getting boshed. You know, like his gas tank has not been the best. I could see a late round getting caught by something. But I'm going to slightly lean towards Akhmedov here.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to slightly lean Boetsch. So I guess we're all kind of in the same boat. The thing about Akhmedov is he just likes to plant his feet and just throw absolute bombs and see if he can catch you. And Boetsch, believe it or not, is actually a pretty decent counterpuncher. I expect that I wouldn't say it's out of the question for Boetsch to catch him with a check hook or something. And I think that Boetsch is actually adding new things to his game, which is sort of weird. Doesn't really dovetail with you know, some of the halfway out the door stuff. But we've seen him use kicks and keep his range a lot better in his recent fights, specifically using that teep to the body, which was really nice in the Johnny Hendricks fight. The problem with Boetsch is that anyone who's tried to take him down basically has. So it's sort of tough from that perspective. I think both guys are alive to hit takedowns in this fight. Ultimately, I'm picking Boetsch just because I think he's the better put together striker, and I think he has more of a plan than just, you know, bite down on the mouthpiece and wing bombs. And like I said, I think the counter striking could come into play. So I'm picking Boetsch.
All right, Benil Dariush, 9,000, taking on Drew Dober at 7,200. Dariush, -190. Comeback on Dober, +175. Dober's been around a surprisingly long time, good pro. Hits really hard for the division, has a little bit of grappling. I think overall he's underrated. The problem is Benil Dariush, if he's not shot, is a top 10 fighter. So I'm devastatingly knocked out against Edson Barbosa, then a draw against Evan Dunham. His last fight, close the distance, smother the guy, which should be his plan here against Dober. I think Dober's a little better than his last opponent. Look, Dariush should win this fight, but I'm going to have some shares of both sides because Dariush will be better on the ground, but Dober, I think, is underrated. I think I'm going to get a little bit of ownership leverage on Dober, not even having to own him that much. Unless everyone thinks that Dariush is shot, which he could be. He was also knocked out by Alexander Hernandez. Picking the fight, I have to go Dariush because I think he is going to smother pressure and grind Drew Dober and probably not score that great, but I want a little sprinkle of each side in GPP. Chris, we'll start you for this fight.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what kind of Dariush we're going to get. If we're going to get the wrestler who just came in and stormed, who was that? The W Santos? I think his name was Santos in his last fight.
Oh, Dariush?
Yeah, who did Dariush fight?
Moises.
Thiago Moises, that's it. I confused the names a little bit. But, yeah, so if we get that guy, I think Dober might be in a bit more trouble because we've seen Dober can be taken down. I like Dober more on the feet. I think he bounces around a little bit more. He's got better movement. Dariush is sort of just a a pressuring flat-footed striker. And I think Dober's a pretty good counter striker. I think he's got a really nice kicking game. Body kicks, leg kicks. I think he hits hard. I do like the pressuring aspect of Dariush. And that and the grappling wrestling, I think, is enough to sway this towards Dariush ultimately. But I think just as the better striker, who I think probably hits a little harder, I think Dober is also live in GPP.
Joe?
So given that we're here to educate and not just pick fights, I have a process that I go through where as soon as salaries drop, usually on Tuesdays for DK, I immediately put a lineup together, and then I save that lineup and I see how my thoughts progress over the course of the week. So the lineup that I put together shortly after salaries dropped, before I did any hardcore research, had Drew Dober in it. And then I went and I started to do some research, and I looked at, yes, Drew Dober has got a mini winning streak. Unfortunately, it's not against really good fighters. On the other hand, Benny was essentially given a gift by the UFC, a promotional debut, someone coming off of a Dana White Contender Series win. I was on Benny when everybody was picking Vic to beat him. I was on Benny there. I was on Benny in his next fight. I think I even gave Benny a shot against Barbosa. He looked good for a round striking, which was like, okay, that was the worst thing that could have happened to Benny, because what he should have done is tried to get that fight to the ground, because that is where Barbosa can be beat. We saw Kevin Lee do it. But anyway, you know, he got a gift his last fight. So my concern is, one, the inferior quality of the competition that, you know, that Dober's been facing. You know, Benny, you know, one of the critiques on him was that he was opening up his own gym. He's the, you know, the BJJ coach at, you know, at Kings. You know, he's got a lot of different things going. I think on paper, this has got to be a fight for Benny to win here. While Dober can strike with volume, he really doesn't have a ton of power. You know, he's more of a striker, a volume striker versus a power striker. So, yes, he's knocked a few guys out over the course of his career, but he's not that big one-punch power guy. So, you know, I'm going to have to go Benny here. I will have some shares of Dober. I'm not crazy about the price on Benny, which is why I think Dober might get some ownership and why it's worth taking a punt on him in GPPs. But I'm going to pick Benny for the win.
Question from chat, one-word answer from you guys. Don't go longer than one word. Who would you rather be more overweight on, Dawson or Dariush? I'm Dawson.
Chris?
Dawson.
All right, there you go. Clean sweep, Otto. Blagoy Ivanov, 8,400, taking on Ben Rothwell at 7,800. Ivanov, -110. Rothwell, +100. Line is closing. I bet this at a good point because, guys, if we weren't short on time for myself this week, I could go on a whole diatribe of how I think Blagoy Ivanov is horrendous. He is so bad. Rothwell, we haven't seen him in 3 years, and I'll still take plus money. Blagoy is just no volume, one shot at a time, has a sambo background, doesn't really use. Rothwell is bigger, stronger. Blagoy is undersized heavyweight. I won't go as long because I do want to keep these condensed, but Rothwell's better everywhere. The fact that they're heavyweights is the only thing that makes me want to not play it in cash, but Blagoy really going to finish him? And the 3-year layup of Rothwell. That's my only concern. And all, you know, coming down from, you know, the reason he was off steroids and he had TRT replacement therapy for a while, is he going to be shot? And he might be. I'll still take a shot at 7,800. Joe?
So as bad as you believe Ivanov to be, signing with the UFC likely cost this guy $1 million. And I will elaborate. He was the World Series of Fighting. Yeah, PFL, but he was the World Series of Fighting champion at heavyweight. There's no doubt in my mind that he could beat either of the two guys that fought for the $1 million at heavyweight. So talk about just bad luck. Like, guess what? You got signed by the UFC. You got to debut against Junior Dos Santos in a 5-round snood fest, of which I tied for first in the $10 by Junior not scoring 92 points in that fight. So, yeah, I mean, tough guy, got stabbed in the heart. Claim to fame is he beat Fedor in a combat sambo contest. Tough guy, very tough guy. With that said, if Rothwell has got any, he was on quite the run before he ran into JDS, and I actually bet Ben to beat JDS again in that fight, and he just did not look great in that fight. I think that was in Serbia or Yugoslavia, someplace like that. Where they had that fight, and he just did not look great. I'm with you, Sean. I'm very surprised about this line. It just didn't make any sense to me. With that said, I don't think it's a great big secret, and I think Rothwell is going to be very, very highly owned. I mean, he might be the most highly owned guy under 8K. So for what that's worth, I'm still picking Ben Rothwell. I will have a contrarian share of Ivanov, but Ben Rothwell.
Chris, we haven't seen Rothwell in 3 years. Please don't overanalyze this fight game. Please, give us a breakdown.
Well, here's what I. Well, no, I agree with you. Actually, I think. Look, I said into his fight with JDS that he just goes wherever his opponent wants him to go, and in the case of JDS and Ben Rothwell, that means he's going to get stuck up against the fence again. Ben Rothwell, I mean, he doesn't have much in the way of footwork, which is why he wasn't able to trap JDS the way that Stipe and some others have. But what he does do is he basically just sticks you up against the fence and looks for a shot, looks to make it dirty, looks to get those uppercuts in the clinch. And Ivanov just doesn't do enough. Like, he'll look for a big counter off the fence, and maybe he'll connect with Rothwell. Rothwell just sort of has a weird guard where he sticks his hands out in front of his face. He's kind of open for shots, so maybe he connects. But I'm not going to bank on that. I just think Rothwell is going to control most of this fight, and I think eventually he's going to get a stoppage.
All right, let's move on here. We got Tim Means, 8,800, taking on Nico Price at 7,400. Tim Means minus 185. Nico Price 170. Nico Price has some knockout power. Tim Means the overall better striker, in my opinion, better movement. It's I think Means should win this fight pretty much everywhere it goes, and relatively safe cash play if you can afford him in that range. But Price has got GPP upside, because we've seen if he wins, it's probably by finish. Chris?
Yeah. I not that big of a team Tim Means fan, but the thing is, I'm less of a Nico Price fan. So I think where that leaves me is I'm picking Means here. I just think that Nico Price just puts himself on the back foot way too often. He just always looks for that counter shot, kind of like the one he got against the model, who was Alan Joban. But I think that Means can use his length and is a good enough pressure fighter and has good enough footwork to where he's not just going to catch Tim Means with a counter. And Means is a good enough grappler to where I don't think that Nico Price is going to be able to take over the fight that way. Even if he does go to the ground, Nico Price likes to make weird decisions when he's on the ground, like trying to flip over Randy Brown when he had his back. Overall, I just don't think Nico Price is really a well put together fighter, and I don't really think he has a plan as such when he goes in there. And I think Tim Means, I think I know how he's going to try to win this fight. I know how he's going to approach it, and I think eventually he gets it done. So I'm going with Means here.
Nope.
Yeah. So one area where I disagree is I think Means is the far more technical striker.
Nico, I agree there.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think that's what I said.
Oh no, I thought Sean had said that Nico Price was a better striker.
No, Price has got more power.
Okay, that I agree with. So Price also absorbs twice as many strikes as he takes, as he offers. I can see Means piecing him up here. I think he's got enough takedown defense to prohibit the fight from getting to the ground. And if it does, I think he's got enough to get back up and to hold his own. I think the last fight, Price's Randy Brown, is something I doubt we'll ever see again, which is essentially a KO from the bottom, which was very entertaining. My big question here is, absent a finish, does Tim Means score enough points to make him worth a play? And that's where I'm very hesitant. I like Means to win the fight. If I was betting on the fight, I would bet on Means. I don't think I am betting on the fight. I do expect Price to be more popular on DraftKings, because while his floor might be lower, I think his ceiling is higher. I don't see Price winning a decision here. If it goes to decision, I see Means winning. I see Price winning by catching Means with something and winning by knockout, which makes his ceiling higher, but his floor much lower. So I'm going to pick Means, but I think Price might be the better DK play, especially in GPPs for his ceiling. So if you're going to play Tim Means in GPPs, I would advise you having some shares of Nico Price.
All right, co-main event time, and it's one where this is probably my – before I started listening to other people, I thought I was going to be against the grain here, but I think I'm a little more popular than I initially thought. Curtis Melendez, 8,200. Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos is 8,000. About to pick a Melender minus 110. Zaleski dos Santos plus 100. A lot of people are high on Melender. I see problems in his game. He has the tall man defense, and against a guy like Zaleski who presses forward, I'm worried he's going to back straight up and get knocked out. He also is completely lost on the ground. C.R. Bahadurzada took him down when he was basically out on his feet. Zaleski doesn't finish a lot of takedowns. I think he has it in his game. He's well-rounded. He's aggressive. Melender live to a knockout, but I like Zaleski quite a bit here, especially at 8,000. Joe.
I think this is a perfect stylistic matchup for Curtis Melender.
Really?
As much as I love Zaleski as a fighter, his kryptonite is takedowns, and that is not something, at least, that Zaleski has shown. He's shown himself to be a stand-up striker. Yes, aggressive, but I don't think that Melender, his weakness is battling aggressive strikers. His weakness is that, you know, my daughter can put him on the ground. That
you
is
don't
Melender's
think Zaleski's
weakness.
Gonna try that? Zaleski did take down Lyman Good. Like
I don't, you know, again, look, it would be against what he's done recently. I'm worried enough that he might try that to have a lot of shares of both of these guys in DK. I think this is a great fight to target. I really do. My pick is going to be Melender just because I think the matchup is a good one for him. I'm assuming that Zaleski is not going to put his wrestling on and go for takedowns. I'm assuming this is going to be a stand-up fight, and I could certainly see Melender getting the better of Zaleski standing up, which is why I'm picking Melender, although I am probably going to be close to equal weighted here on DK. As a matter of fact, I can pretty much honestly say that based on what I've done so far, is my top two fighters in lineups are Zaleski and Melender.
How about Chris?
Yeah, I'm going with Melender too. I think one of the big secrets about Zaleski's game is that although he can flurries strikes forward, and if you don't pressure him, he can lead. But if you pressure him, he's very content to just hang back and sort of play a counter-striking game. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think Melender is going to be actively pressuring. And we've seen Melender in recent fights really working on his range tools a lot more. A better jab, a good, like, you know, that sort of oblique kick that John Jones and Jackson Wink fighters use. I just think that if Zaleski's stuck out, like if it's a fight where he's stuck at range with periodic periods of just sort of rushing in and looking for the big blitz, I don't think that's going to be enough. I think Melender's going to control too much of the fight, and I think he hits hard enough and is a diverse enough striker that he can catch Zaleski and really hurt him. So I understand the liability of the wrestling, and even guys who don't wrestle, when they know it's enough of a liability, they switch to it. We've seen that in the past. So you can't totally discount that. So I won't be discounting it either. But as far as the pick, I'm going with Melender.
All right, main event time. Junior Dos Santos, 9,400, taking on Derek Lewis at 6,800. See the line of that currently. Dos Santos minus 200. Comeback on Lewis plus 185. Jill in chat earlier said she didn't understand why Lewis wasn't favored. Look, Lewis is a fun guy. good personality, popular.
Wait, who said that?
Somebody in chat, okay. Jill, I think a new viewer. And, okay. And look, he's popular, but JDS, if you're new to MMA, he is a former champion. He is an animal, just all around better fighter. Is he shot? He's old. I don't think he's shot. Maybe he's a little more patient. Technical boxing is going to piece up Derek Lewis. The problem is Derek Lewis does have big power. Derek Lewis could be losing this fight until he wins it, same as he did against Alexander Volkov. I will have a lot more Junior Dos Santos. I see people talking down off this fight. It makes me actually want more Junior Dos Santos because there are enough underdogs I like to pay up for him in that range. I like JDS. I think he wins here. I like Derek Lewis. I can't endorse it here, though. So give me JDS. Chris.
Yeah. Look, I talked a little bit about JDS, and we know that if you can strategically pressure him and get him back to the fence, you can land a shot and knock him out. I mean, even how Tai Tuivasa was close to doing that in their fight. But I think the problem is that Derek Lewis isn't anything like a consistent pressure fighter. I think that JDS is just gonna pressure him and probably piece him up. I expect him to hurt him to the body. We've seen him hurt to the body in fights before. In the Travis Brown fight, in the Volkov fight, and JDS has, you know, a great straight to the body, great jab to the body. I can see him just doing work in there, as you said. And of course, he's got enough power to finish the fight anytime, but he's not enough of a guy who's going to come in there with a game plan to trap him against the fence and try to land his shots to where I can pick him to try to execute a game plan. So in lieu of that, I'm going to go with the way more technical striker to piece him up and maybe get a late finish.
Joe.
Yeah. So if anybody out there is by a computer and they want to Google Puncher's Chance, you will see a photograph of Derek Lewis that will come up. I think that Junior Dos Santos has proven that he can fight a smart fight and just work Lewis over the course of five rounds. I am not sure that it is going to be a high-scoring fight. You know, obviously, Lewis is all about ceiling and not floor because his ceiling is he catches JDS with that one punch. We saw Overeem do it. I actually was – that was like my first UFC event that I ever attended was in Orlando, and Overeem just decimated Junior Dos Santos with a knockout in that fight. So look, it can happen. I just think that JDS is a smarter fighter who's shown he can go five rounds. He has the cardio. Lewis admittedly only trains between 30 and 60 minutes per day. That's the truth. So five rounds, he's got to be dreading. I could see him just, and he's got, historically has had back issues. I could certainly see him just like calling it a night if he's not going anywhere after the course of three rounds, once you get into those championship rounds. So I'm going to pick JDS. I like him a fair bit here. My only concern is scoring. I mean, I want to think that he's relatively safe in cash. I just don't know about GPPs.
All right, guys, it is time for hot takes. Anybody listening, if you got them, if you're live in chat, type one up. I'll read one on the air. We'll do the viewers one last. My hot take, Ben Rothwell gets a finish in his first fight in 3 years.
Okay, well, since I was actually going to do something very similar to that, I actually bet Ben Rothwell by submission, 10-fingered go-go choke, in case you're wondering, at plus 475. So I took that bet. I only put $50 on it, but I hedged that by playing Sean's bet. Ben Rothwell wins inside the distance. So I've got two bets out there. Ben Rothwell by submission at plus 475, and Ben Rothwell inside the distance plus 215.
Chris, give us a hot take.
All right. I think my main goal this week is to make Otto scream. So I'm going to say that Rocco Martin knocks out Moraes.
All right. And his Otto's the only one who gave us one. He says, so the viewer hot take is from Automatic 23. Dawson outscores everyone. Wow. Highest score on the slate.
Well, by the way, you know what? I want to be Otto. I want to, like, live vicarious. I mean, here's a guy. I can't tell everybody what he does because he maybe doesn't want people to know. But here's a guy that has the ability to travel and go watch fights. And he went to Australia to watch Whitaker. Unfortunately, that didn't work out too well. He was in Vegas last week for the fights in Vegas. So, you know, he's a guy that I want to be. I mean, I want to definitely meet up with Otto.
Otto, if you were there on Wednesday and you didn't let me know, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, he was. I know he was out there for the fights. And I think he's moving to the New York area. So we'll have to we'll have to work something out with Otto.
We got to have another Tri-State viewing party that hopefully Chris can make it to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced that Chris is actually allowed out of his house.
They keep me locked in the basement.
Or do you even drive, Chris? Do you have a driver's license?
No, but that's
ruthless.
You're not serious, are you?
That's, you know what? Wait. This is a good cliffhanger. No, let's just say yes, and we'll talk about it next week on Fight IQ. Guys, that's what we got for you. Good luck in your contests. We'll see you next week. Take care.